BBC News.
In 2009, Bristol University and the NSPCC published a landmark report on partner abuse in teenage relationships. Surprised by its conclusions, the journalist Asma Mir decided to find out more. In Teenage Kicks, she talks frankly and openly to groups of teenagers to explore how, for a significant minority, the term battle of the sexes has taken on a whole new meaning.
So you'll write, you'll take a picture of the girl and, like, you'll basically say what you've done with her, all the positions.
And you have it up on Facebook and everyone's looking and people comment, yeah, I've done this to girls.
She's got a beauty spot there or there.
Yeah, I've pulled brain off this girl. She gives it to me good, whatnot.
Whether it's teenage girls being humiliated on Facebook or young men filming sex with their partners, growing up now isn't what it used to be.
I've done a couple of videos, to be honest, and like, I've showed it around, yeah.
If I take a photo of me and you like this, or naked, what's the difference between me recording us?
It's a memory. I like to be able to remember fun stuff that I've done at the age of 18.
Are you showing your friends or whatnot? That's just lowering a girl's respect proper.
How?
Because then you're showing people what you've done to her. People don't need to know. It's between you and her. Whatever.
All right, but then she shouldn't have been in my video. Well,
yeah. Teenagers today, navigating a path into adulthood through the multimedia world. This programme is about their relationships. And yes, they're still about fun, flirtations, first dates, just like they always were. But for a minority, they're also about pressure and physical and psychological abuse, sometimes by a teenage partner. I wanted to find out what's normal for today's teenagers, so I went to talk to them.
Like, if you actually want to meet someone, I actually recommend knowing them for quite a long time on Facebook and actually seeing them on a webcam or something.
Webcams, the internet, they're all a massive part of young people's lives. Now, when I was a teenager, all my friends were people I actually knew. And if you wanted to make more friends, you just chatted to the girl next to you on the bus to school. But things are more complicated now. Today's teenagers are as likely to find friends online on social networking sites like Facebook, where you can invite anyone to become a virtual friend and post photos, comments or videos to their webpage or wall.
Like for me, I have about 600 and something friends. But there's a girl who goes to my college who has about 5,000 something friends. It's different. Like there's people that have about 200 friends. But I'd say they have more of a private life. They don't add just random people. They just have who they know.
With so many virtual friends able to access your information and pass it to all their friends, there's the potential for trouble.
Say someone posts something on someone's wall and then the next day they see that person that they don't know, but they know because of the picture. It's like, oh, so that's that sketch that we saw the other in Facebook. That's the name that you already have. No, you're knowing that it's still not true, but other people don't know that.
Sket, that was a new word for me. It's offensive and it means the same as slut. Now, I'd never heard of so-called sket sites on the internet either. But then I'm not their age, and the teenage world has a language and vocabulary of its own.
There's a lot of sket stories, so a certain name, the sket, certain name, the sket, and there's loads of stories.
They always make, like, special accounts just to publicise someone who's been around, if you get it. Pictures of girls, yeah, just basically write stuff underneath, like, oh, this girl's done that, this.
So what you're saying is that some, presumably boys, put up a page about a specific girl.
Yeah.
And it's the kind of, what, rating her, are they, that kind of thing? What is it they're doing?
Like, downrating her.
It's not necessarily boys, like, it could be girls, because maybe they don't like her, they know that she's done this one thing, and then they go publicise it, like, making it, blowing it out of proportion.
So, just to be clear, are they putting information around sexual encounters with boys?
Yeah, stuff like that.
And what do they think about it, and what do their parents think about it, and what are they going to do about it?
Well, they probably wouldn't tell their parents, but they would probably be, like, concerned about it, because that's not what they want to be, like, publicised.
And you've seen these pages, have you?
Yeah.
That is really, really common. I wouldn't say it's entirely the girl's fault that happened to them, but, I mean, if you're in a relationship, it's up to you to secure that no one can see anything. I don't know when it started, about 2 years ago.
Bit shocked by that. And it was shocking that girls could be so easily and so publicly humiliated, that this was also normal to this group of 15 and 16-year-olds. Facebook has told us that keeping their young users safe is a top priority. They've set up a special safety page to help them. But bullying still goes on. Part of the problem is that this age group are the first to enter puberty as savvy internet users, as sociologist Christine Barter from the University of Bristol explains.
I think for young people, one of the issues is that they are the first generation who are having to navigate new technologies and their relationships in this way. We need to be careful that the internet is not seen as a negative thing always, because young people themselves see it as very positive. But it is a central aspect of all young people's relationships now. That's how they talk to their friends. It's also how they communicate with their partners.
In 2009, the NSPCC published a report on partner exploitation and violence in intimate teenage relationships. Christine Barter was the lead researcher. Her team talked to young people aged 13 to 17 across England, Scotland and Wales, and some of the findings were surprising. Most 13 to 17-year-olds, that's 88%, said they had been in some form of relationship with a partner. More worryingly, many of the girls said they were experiencing violence. A quarter said they had been pushed, slapped or hit. A third admitted they'd been pressured or forced into sexual acts against their will. And nearly three quarters claimed they'd been bullied, humiliated, called names or controlled by a boyfriend. And this was reported across all backgrounds and classes. So while teenage relationships are generally healthy, for a significant minority there seems to be abuse. And some of that is happening on the internet. And as Christine told me, the NSPCC report showed that is what makes it distinct from adult domestic violence.
Forms of violence can now take are very different. So new technologies, mobile phones, the internet, allows controlling behaviour to encompass all aspects of young people's lives. So, for example, we had situations where young women were at home and having to answer their text messages from their partners straight away, having to include them on all their internet and so forth. They weren't allowed to be without their partners. That is maybe an area which is very different to adults, and that is a problem we haven't seen before.
You only get abused if you're weak.
You only get abused if you're weak, that's another myth.
While the NSPCC research is relatively new, there have been a number of organisations working to help teenagers avoid abusive relationships for some years. Tender is one of six flagship projects funded by Comic Relief to use drama with teenagers to promote the healthy relationship message. I went along to one of their workshops with Year 10 school children aged 14 and 15. They were rehearsing a performance to show Year 9 so they could pass the message on to them.
This. Everyone's waiting.
The teacher, get me back.
Oh, fine. Do you think this is a healthy relationship?
Or an unhealthy relationship?
What makes a healthy relationship?
And what makes an unhealthy relationship?
Talking to this group reassured me. Most hadn't yet embarked on relationships, let alone experienced abuse within them. But as they spoke to me, I was aware that they were already learning the teenage vocabulary of sex, if not the behaviour.
Yeah, because now boys call it casual to get certain stuff off girls and everything. They'll be like, yeah, what did you do last weekend? Oh, you know, the casual thing. Went to her house, yeah, got casual things.
What does that mean?
Like that now they just see it as, yeah, I'm getting stuff off her. It's casual, it's normal.
I think the older you grow up from years, instead of being, oh, yeah, you did that, like, wow, it's like, it's casual, like, it's normal. Like, it's on a regular basis now.
This slang word, casual, was another new one on me, so I got the boys together to find out what it was all about. Casual? What does that mean? Does that mean anything to you guys at all?
Well, it's like, they call it linking, which is not going out. It's like in between friends and, like, proper going out. And they just say it's, the boys take a more casual approach to it.
You're not going out, but when you're at school or when you're around your mates, then you act like you're in a relationship.
Bizarre, yeah, doesn't it? I don't quite get it.
Yeah.
You have a going out, you're not.
So you wouldn't take this girl out on a date. Like, just when you're in school, you probably kiss her and hug her, but out of school, then you're a different guy.
They get so much. They got that control of the girl because the girl likes him. What they say, sort of like in the slang, I got her in smash. I got her in lockdown. On a leash, basically. You got control of her. You know, if you tell her jump, she says how high. It's a link, what they would say.
The word link again, this time explained by an 18-year-old. Now, link is originally a gang word that somehow passed into urban teenage slang. And with older teenagers, the meaning is a bit different.
We like to have fun and it makes us feel
Like, let's be honest, it makes us feel more like a man if I sleep with a girl and then I'm saying, hey, you sleep with her now. Like, have my fun as well. And at any time, we can call this girl. Whenever our girlfriend don't want to have sex with us.
It just happens. You just share a girl.
There are still rules, though, about which girls you would share, as the boys told me.
There's female mates, yeah, that you would just chill with, exactly like a bread. But then there's a next two type. There's the ones that will let off to any and every guy, more or less. And you know that's the ones you can share between you all. And then there's the ones that ain't like that. And that's the ones that you got to make wifey. And that's the ones that will hold back a bit longer and make you work for it. And that like working for it. So that one, you know, yeah, you can hold her down. She's a wifey type.
Wifey, the word for a girlfriend. Another piece of teen slang like link, sket or casual. This group is also working with Tender, but on a different dramatic project. They're part of a group of older teenagers making a film about sexual violence to show to their peers in youth clubs and schools. They've come up with an idea, workshopped it, then created a story and dialogue, and they're acting in it as well. The brief was to find something that their age group might find relevant. The subject they chose was gang rape.
OK, should we just go again quickly, close up, straight away?
The story I came out with is important, but it's also real. Which was gang rape, but it's not a physical rape. It's sort of like a pressure. The girl is pretty much pressured. Now, what generally happens, there's more guys to ratio of girls. For example, 3 girls and about 7 guys hanging out. And, you know, there is at least 2 girls and 2 guys which know they're going to have sex with each other. At least 4 guys left out. Now, what usually happens is the friend, you know, gets the other friend to come and, you know, have sex with the girl as well. The main character, he kind of, like, pressurises her into doing it, like, kind of telling her that you came and you smoked my weed and you come and chill with us and you drink my drinks and you don't expect to give us anything in return.
My character also gets the choice whether he wants to go upstairs and sleep with her. But then he sees the way she looks and how upset and that distraught she looks, but then it's all down to a decision, really, whether he goes through with it or not.
The guy might not even see it as rape at that stage, but she will see it as rape because however it's affected her. So it's got to be shown that them things happen to help people.
The film content raises huge issues that the group want to tackle, the legality of what was happening in this situation and the issue of consent.
Us as grown-up professionals who've done lots of training in this area will identify that as rape. Young women who have that situation happen on a regular basis, that's the normality.
Rape in every girl's head, definitely in my head, is I'm walking home in a dark alleyway, someone grabs me from behind and drags me. That is rape. Rape is always a scary, dark scenario.
This teenager is taking part in a workshop on consent with Rachel Bunting from the NIA Project. NIA is another charity working with young people on issues of abuse in relationships.
Okay, so I've got here, just as if by magic, the legal definition of consent. So a person consents if he or she agrees by choice and has the freedom and capacity to make that choice. So let's look at the word choice. What would impact on someone's choice to have sex?
The age of consent is 16. Below that age, sex is illegal. It would be naive to think that all children wait until they're 16 to have sex, although the law is there to protect teenagers and isn't normally used to prosecute them. But whatever age they start, understanding consent and how to withhold it is key in keeping teenagers safe. Christine Barter's research showed that girls felt unable to say no to sex, which left them vulnerable.
The issue of consent was hugely problematic. And what we found was young women said that they weren't agreeing to undertake certain sexual acts, but they didn't actually verbally say no very often because they found that very intimidating. So often what they tried to do was show that they were not consenting in relation to their body language or actually removing their boyfriend's hands and so forth. But often their boyfriends didn't take these prompts into account. I don't want to put the responsibility on girls here because it is boys' responsibility not to behave in that way. But I think girls could be provided with an array of strategies which might help them portray to their partners what they want.
The NSPCC research found that many teenage girls felt a social pressure to stay in a relationship, no matter how abusive. For some, a relationship gave them status. Perhaps all this is a possible explanation for why so many teenage girls find themselves in abusive relationships. But why are boys failing to understand what abusive behaviour is? youth projects point to one pervasive influence, porn.
It comes up 24/7. It comes on adverts on TV. It comes on little pop-ups on the internet. I'm talking about pornography. It's open for everyone. It's in magazines, in shops where kids can just walk in, want to pick up a magazine. They're picking up a porn magazine.
The Sun, on page 3, where there's naked women. Nah.
Yeah. But you can learn stuff from pornography, though. Definitely.
Sex moves.
Yeah. Sex moves, a lot of different ways. Because you could see it, yeah? Are we allowed to talk about full-blown sex? Someone, say at the age of 15, might just know sex as you grab the thing here, you get one finger, and after that you push in.
The rest of the conversation became more graphic. These young people have a lot of sexual knowledge of a technical kind. It's definitely not what I knew about sex at 18, but then I wasn't learning about sex from porn. There's a lot of discussion about porn. It's well-trodden ground, but while we talk about its prevalence, do we really know how much it's moulding young people's ideas and their behaviour?
Do you think porn's a good place to learn about sex?
No. The view of the Youth Project workers we spoke to is that pornography, hard and soft, is deeply affecting teenagers, from their views on body shapes to the way they treat each other, from the way they have sex to their future jobs. Because much as listening to the radio is a habit for you, porn is becoming a habit for them.
Glamour modelling now has been so much more publicised, and it's a way of fast money for people.
The fact that you can get paid a lot just to take your top off has appealed to so many people, and that is something that needs to looked at, because girls are wanting to be this when they could aim higher and be something like a doctor or a teacher.
Not all girls, but there have been surveys done where girls have been asked what they want to be, and a lot of them have said glamour models. Not even models, glamour models. What do you think of those kind of career choices? Can you understand why some girls want to do that?
Personally, I would say it's all right. Because, like, a lot of girls in this school probably are planning on going to college and stuff, but when stuff like that doesn't go well, they probably will have to do stuff to, like, make money, or they won't survive.
For some time now, the government has been concerned about the effects on young people of sexual content wherever they find it, on the web, in children's games, clothes and TV, music and magazines. In 2010, the psychologist Dr. Linda Papadopoulos published research for the Home Office on the sexualisation of young people. This was the third government-commissioned report in this area in as many years. On the back of the three reports, more research has been commissioned by the Department for Education and will report this May. Dr. Papadopoulos felt sure that porn was harming girls.
What we're seeing is that increasingly girls are deriving scripts, male-dominated scripts, from the porn industry. We're seeing an increasing number of girls having many partners at once, literally scripts from the porn industry. We're seeing much more anal sex, and that's fine if a girl enjoys it. But in actual fact, what we're finding is it's about fulfilling this kind of monolithic male fantasy. Even things like the fact that the number one teenage surgery procedure used to be rhinoplasty. You know, girls would get nose jobs, they hated their nose. This has now been overtaken by breast augmentation. This is for teens. Why? Why has this happened? Because we're saying now the most important thing you can be is sexy and sexually available.
Dr. Papadopoulos also believes that society's attitudes to sex are partly behind the problem of teen partner violence.
Well, there is evidence there might be a link there, of tentative research that suggests that the more a woman is objectified, the more likely a young man is to relate to her as an object and is more likely to treat her as such, therefore abuse is much more likely to happen.
Broadly, how would you say that has changed in recent years, maybe in the last 5 years or so?
What we found with the research that we conducted is that it has changed. I went into doing the research thinking, right, we'll find one or two things. It wasn't one or two things. It was this drip, drip, drip effect. So it's not just in the games kids watch. It's not just in the videos they see. It's not just in the images in magazines. It's not just in the language, the derogatory language about women. It's kind of everywhere. And I think that's the central issue that needs to be explored.
If porn is a link to violence, we should be concerned, because talking to some of the teenage girls about their experiences was frightening.
He hit me in front of his friends. Like, there was no reason towards it. It's just I broke up with him. So I've come out and I see my ex and I'm thinking, oh, shit, like...
You knew what time it was, bro.
So he's like, come in out. So I've obviously got scared and I've gone to him. He's just went, boom, spat at me in front of all of his friends. They were just laughing.
When girls do try to say no and walk away from a relationship, violence can escalate.
I had a boyfriend who used to batter me, like, proper batter me, like, and I know the first signs, like, all the jealousy and shit. I used to love it. I used to be like, oh, yeah, he don't move no other guys. Like, I used to love it off. I lived with him for, like, what, a year and a half, yeah? Like, we were proper close and that, and then he just flipped. Like, he stabbed me there. He's broke my teeth, broke my nose, my ribs, everything. Like, I went to the hospital, I got 3 stitches. I said I tripped and I fell down the stairs and I landed on something. Like, I lied, obviously, I'm not gonna. When I done my rib, that was the worst, my nose, and he just punched me. And I remember when he punched me, that was my nose gone. Like, I dropped on the floor and he just kicked my teeth. And like, it's because I'm telling him I'm leaving in a minute. Like, my sister's telling me, are you mad? Why are you with this guy? Move on, move on. So I'm crying, I'm just like, I love him, he loves me, like, no one understands me the way he does, he knows everything, da da da. I just, like, I know it sounds dumb and I sound stupid, but he just seemed perfect, like, he was the love of my life, like, now, later. I was only, like, 16, 15. He was, like, 19, like, slightly older, not really old, but...
She's just 18. Almost all the elements of her story came up in the NSPCC research, from girls being most at risk when seeing a slightly older boy to a belief that a bit of jealousy is actually flattering. Now, her story is extreme, but even younger women who haven't experienced violence for themselves told me they'd seen it.
Just 2 days ago, I saw a guy beating up a girl, and it was just as if nothing happened after... He just beat her up and went. The police were there, but I don't think anyone got caught because everyone ran away. But the fact is, he thought he could beat her up because he can. So the fact that it's just so normal doesn't look good on the youth.
So it was 2 young people?
Yeah.
What kind of age?
About our age. 15. 16.
Does it surprise you that this kind of thing goes on?
We were absolutely shocked when we saw it because we just thought, how could he possibly do it?
Is that the first time any of you have seen anything like that?
A few months ago, outside of school, a girl actually got hit. And that was the first time I saw a girl get hit. And the thing is, the boy carried on as if he didn't do anything wrong. And, yeah, he just kept walking with his head held high. I was shocked. And none of the girls helped her. All the girls just surrounded. And then there was gossip. Oh, she broke her nail, or he pulled her hair, now she looks like a wreck or something. No one actually helped the girl.
Why do you think that they didn't?
I don't know, maybe afraid of the guy.
Rachel Bunting from the Naya Project has been working with this group of young women on issues around sexual images of women in the media and bullying. She worries about some of the contradictions she hears and what they say, even after she's spoken to them.
You're most likely not going to know someone who's like an abusive person. You're not going to know someone because like they don't show it. So... there's no need to talk to boys because you know them and you don't think they do that kind of stuff.
Do you think you can tell what kind of a boyfriend a guy's going to be by looking at him?
If you have a good sense of human relationship.
Later I talked to Rachel about this conversation.
There is definite contradictions. When you asked her, would you discuss this with men? She said, well, there's no need because I would know if he was a violent person, which kind of is a contradiction because we've talked about the fact that you don't know if someone's violent. It is behind closed doors.
That is quite worrying, isn't it?
It is quite worrying, yeah.
In this programme, the young people I've spoken to have all been involved in youth projects on healthy relationships. But I notice that while they can all say the right things, they're not always able to use that information in the daily choices they make in their own lives. Tamsin Larby from the Tender Project doesn't believe these contradictions undermine the work she does.
I mean, I know that there have been at least a couple of occasions where young women have reported back at the end of projects that they've finished relationships that they were in, that they realised weren't healthy relationships. Not all young people do change their attitudes, though, and often I think what the work that we're doing is seeding the idea that maybe things could be different.
Mm. I think it's a community response. You can't just say it's one person's responsibility. We as a community need to address this issue.
I don't know, that's the question. We got to ask you that. Where are the adults to help us? Where are they? Who are they? I don't know.
That seemed to me to be a problem with adult intervention, that something vital in what young people were learning was somehow passing them by.
There's different organisations that you can go to for help, yeah? But
what you might think is wrong, they might think is right, and what you might think is right, they might think is wrong. I think it's about trusting your instincts to a certain extent.
Like, or maybe it's just the right information, but we just ain't used it in the right way.
And the problem is that if teenagers don't feel that adults are giving them direction, they'll find their own way. The girls are doing it already, but are they getting it right?
Boys, they think they're on top. They think they're the boss. They say, we're either going out, we're a link, or we're friends. Whereas now we're switching roles, and it's like girls are taking control, which I think is all right, because girls nowadays, we don't really have to feel hurt by links, because if we're getting ourselves into it, we know what's going to happen. If we start to fall for them, then, oh, shame on us.
Now there is a saying, girls are taking over.
It's true.
Girls are a step ahead over boys. It's usually the boys that are turned to take the piss out of us. But nowadays, the girls are a step over the boys and they're taking their piss before the boys try to take the piss out of us.
Playing the boys at their own game is also a risky strategy for girls, because a girl who does can easily be labelled a slag by other girls as much as boys.
Certain girls, yeah. Obviously, everyone's looking for love, innit? Girls, they love that sort of attention from the guys, and they'll hop, that's how they become hoes, innit? Certain girls that I know, like, I don't roll with them, obviously, because of the way they're moving, I don't like it. Certain girls, they want to go out there and have sex. They want to go trap that guy.
What we found was that girls often pigeonholed other young women into a category of being sexually promiscuous, and therefore what happened to them was their own fault. And girls who are not seen in that way, it was more likely they could be identified as being a more valid victim. And we have this construction where girls' sexuality is very disembodied. Girls don't really have an understanding of their own sexual desires, because that is seen as for only girls who have very negative sexual reputations. Whereas boys are portrayed as always being sexually assertive because of the peer group dynamics within their male cultures. And I think that's what we need to challenge.
So whose job is it to do the challenging? Teachers or perhaps parents? They've been absent so far, largely because when I mentioned them to the teenagers in this programme, it was almost as if they didn't count. But they are the obvious people to help their children. And Christine believes that if we really want to challenge what's wrong in society, it's parents we should focus on.
What we found in our research was that young people did not talk to their parents about their relationships. They were only talking to other young people. So I think parents do need to have support. Just because adolescents are maybe not physically dependent on them, still emotionally they are. I think it's cool not to get on with your parents, but I don't actually think the reality is like that. I think young people want to have very close relationship with their parents, and I think we need to support that environment.
We may be shocked by what some young people are experiencing, and we may think that it doesn't affect us or our children, but it does. And if the experts are right, then we need to do something about it, from parents to teachers to the media. Young people can't be left in a vacuum where their peers or the internet or porn are their only reference points. For me, finding out what's normal for teenagers has been a real eye-opener. Remember, though, most teenage relationships are healthy. But where there's violence, that is something we need to worry about. We can't just be horrified at what goes on but do nothing to change it. That really would mean letting down the next generation.
Teenage Kicks was presented by Asma Mir. The producer in Bristol was Liz Pearson.